Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What's your name, son?
Danny Bernstein. I'm from Deerfield, Illinois.
Dan Bernstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's enough. Don't care. Not interested.
Insightful sports talk for your workday from one of Chicago's most respected radio professionals.
Professional what?
Professional penis.
You don't know what the hell you're doing!
Dan Bernstein.
The guy is full of hot air.
In a semi-permanent state of flatulence.
Middays on The Score.
We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And we have another full show for you today. Patrick Mooney, the senior writer for The Athletic, who covers the Cubs. He's writing about baseball's restart and how this is all happening. He's going to join us at 10:40. We're going to check in with former MLBer Cody Decker, the Radio.com Sports MLB insider and the co-host of Swings and Misses at Radio.com. He's going to join us, give us a player perspective and everything that's going on at 10 o'clock. Midday Midway at 10:40. At 11 o'clock, Rich Lerner of the Golf Channel, their anchor reporter, will check in about what we are seeing, about what Dustin Johnson is achieving, and when we can finally get these guys on a real golf course that isn't the PGA equivalent of a pitch and putt and watch them actually deal with some distances. Maybe preview some majors as well. So Rich Lerner will be here at 11. At 11:20, Danny Ecker of Crane's Chicago Business is going to join us because he has the scoop on how Chicago is one of four cities that is still in play to be one of two NHL hubs, and what's going to go on then with McCormick Place possibly being an NHL village for, I want to say, 12 teams. And then we're all worried about losing our summer practice ice time if they come in and start commandeering all of the hockey rinks for NHL teams. But, you know, that's just my personal concern at this point. Surprises along the way as well. 312-644-6767 is our phone number at WSCR The Score. You email us at Bernstein at 670thescore.com. And that is where you go to listen to us live because we're streaming at 670thescore.com. Texting is there for you as well. It is the text zone. It's brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. You want to text? You text the number you call. Same one. Very easy, 312-644-6767. And when you do text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. You want to follow along on Twitter? You can. That is at Bernstein670. You can also follow my personal account as well. It's more than just sports there. Stick to sports, Bernstein. Well, you follow if you want and don't follow if you don't want. That's all cool. That is at Dan_Bernstein. You must download the radio.com app. You actually must. Or my personal secret police, not yet defunded, they will arrive at your home and do horrible things to you. And when you download that, you can stream The Score on your mobile devices. You can interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. Jay Zawoski is the executive producer. Ray Diaz is the executioner. He is the man on the board doing what he does. Think about what's going on right now and just think about sort of where we are. Every once in a while, as we continue to just go from day to day to day in whatever this is and figuring out our new normal, there's something that happens that is extraordinary that we don't really notice as extraordinary because everything is so extraordinary right now. There is no ordinary anymore. But baseball players are deciding they don't want to play. And we're kind of okay with it when Ryan Zimmerman says, I've got a mother who is high risk. I've got young family, pregnant wife, whatever it might be. It's like, you know what? Nah, I'm good. I don't need my multi-million dollar prorated contract. I am not going to play baseball. And Mike Leake says, I don't want to play. Think about the discussions that we've had throughout the years on this station for somebody missing a game because their child is being born. And we had a significant portion of the listenership up in arms. They get paid to play. That's my team. You got to be there when you're supposed to be there. Think about this. Think about it. That we've had outrage at guys missing a game or a couple of games, and it's evolved into understanding that there can be a paternity reprieve list where guys can actually be out for a while, you know, because their kid is being born. And we're having players now in the NBA, in the Avery Bradley of the Lakers, like, no, not going to do it. And some of it is, and it's health. Obviously, people can make their own decisions and decide if they want their millions of dollars or not. Don't get me started on the college stuff. We're going to get to that later. The idea of the compulsion to want to do this and take these risks to play for free, which is completely different. There's so much going on. Obviously, the biggest reason is exposure to a novel virus. The biggest reason is risk to one's own health, risk to the health of family members, and or risk of health risk to anyone. That's this whole idea of being in it together, of wearing a mask, not for you, but wearing a mask for others. Public health. There can be some empathetic concerns where it isn't just, is this okay for me? Maybe it's just kind of not okay to do. And that's informing other things, too, as we react and respond. And I notice the lack of outrage. I notice that people are, that you are more aware of it being okay for a highly paid professional athlete on your team. If somebody on the Cubs right now, if Anthony Rizzo said, you know, I'm a cancer survivor, I may have some issues here down the line. And importantly, it's a novel virus. We don't know what this means for long-term health, let alone antibody protection or anything we're thinking about short term or being asymptomatic or having it be like the sniffles. We don't know what it's going to do to the vascular system, to hearts, lungs, brains, anything 5, 10, 20 years down the line. We have no idea what the actual risks are, and we can't pretend that we know just because somebody survives it or shakes it off or makes it through an asymptomatic period or a lightly symptomatic period. That can just be the start of things. We have absolutely no idea. People seem very unwilling, especially young people, really, really stupid young people who are gathering in bars and infecting each other. There's one bar in Michigan, 100 people now have been infected from one single bar. From one, they think it's one night of exposure may have infected 100 people. And you think about that as vectors. I mean, there are a lot of kids who just think that, okay, well, this is like the flu or this is like a cold or this is just some rhinovirus. It isn't. And we don't know, and doctors don't know, and won't know, and they know they won't know, and they're telling you that, and still people are being stupid. And people are making decisions based on health. But then you hear Ian Desmond, and that's when this gets a little different for me, is you start to hear Ian Desmond talk about more than just the pandemic itself. When he obviously says the COVID-19 pandemic has made this baseball season one that is a risk I am not comfortable taking. So the Rockies outfielder is not going to play. But he goes further than that. And he mentions his pregnant wife and four young children. They said they have a lot of questions about what's going on in the world. Home is where I need to be. Home for my wife, Chelsea. Home to help. Home to guide. Home to answer my older three boys' questions about coronavirus and civil rights and life. Home to be their dad. And he talks about what he can do for his hometown of Sarasota, Florida, and what he can do for baseball there, and how important youth baseball was for him growing up and supporting teaching the game. But when he starts broadening this towards something more, it gets us to what's happening in the NBA and how players have felt about returning to play. There are multiple layers here. We hear the headlines and we hear player doesn't want to play, player opts out. Think, okay, well, he tests positive or he's got somebody in his family who's high risk. It's more than that. And it's really clear when we start hearing what NBA players are saying about how they return and what is okay to do and what they should be doing, what they feel they should or shouldn't be doing currently, with so many things conflated. Fred VanVleet, who is the Rockford native, who has made a nice little NBA career for himself with the Toronto Raptors. One of their terrific developmental stories. It's one of the reasons why you see so many Raptors executives and coaches who are prized by other organizations, including the Chicago Bulls. And we can hope if Adrian Griffin's on the way. Fred VanVleet is one of their ringing success stories. And he mentioned that in his mind, players really shouldn't be playing NBA basketball right now.
It sucks, man. And it's terrible timing, but that's been 2024. So I think, obviously we all know the right thing to do is to not play, to take a stand, to, you know, morally, yes, that makes sense. But life goes on. We're all young black guys, and none of us want to give any money back, and I don't think that we should. And I think that most of us decide to play, and something that we'll have to live with. But I trust that my heart's in the right place, and I'm doing enough to really make change. I think the sentiment for us is just, you know, to organize what we have here as a team, as a unit, as brothers that come together to organize. If we're going to be put on display as a unit, we have to organize and come up with some key points and calls to action of what we believe in. I think overall, just making sure that it's not forgotten, it's not swept under the rug. We know basketball is a distraction, naturally. That's just what it is. So going forward, how do we make sure that we're still, you know, being responsible and taking care of our responsibilities? I think just pushing the organization to do more, pushing ourselves to do more, pushing our communities to do more. And we all have a lot of resources, and we all have huge platforms. So just coming together and figuring out how we can put those things together. But yeah, I don't really want to bore you with all the details, but just, I think all of us, the guys you mentioned, have worked up enough credit to just trust that we're doing the right thing. We're it's on our mind every day, and we're really doing work behind the scenes, not just for now because it's cool on social media to post Black Lives Matter, but something that's going to last for years and years to come, and trying to make real change.
Good on Fred VanVleet. And I do think that it raises some very fair questions about the medium term and the longer term. At some point, there's going to be a vaccine of some level of efficacy to protect, whether completely or at least seasonally, from coronavirus. And that's until the next virus makes its transmission from animals to humans and we start this all over again. I guess they found one that looks like a swine flu that they think that could be transmissible relatively soon. So great, 2020, go for it. But it raises the question of when it starts to be okay to have these multiple channels all going on and how they make it work. Because to hear it from him and to try to see it and hear it through his eyes and ears, what he's processing right now is that he doesn't think it feels okay to go back as the NBA is largely a group of young black men being a distraction for everybody and entertaining. This was talked about among players as this was all happening and as protests were raging. So we're going to have to figure out a time and a place and a way to make it all come together. And what's going to happen is, I think, inevitably, the opposite of what so many people want to keep your politics out of my sports. I don't think you're ever going back. I think you're hearing now from the players that they are going out of their way to make their jobs and their lives. You know, Ian Desmond talking about not feeling that he should be playing right now, that he needs to be home talking to his kids about more than sports. The old tired thing we would always say, oh, well, this puts sports in perspective. We are in a new place now. We are in a new place with sports and the meaning of sports, and it's coming from the athletes themselves. It's coming from the people who do it and the choices that they make. That on one level, for them to be as empowered as they are to say, no, you can keep the money this year, I'm not going back to play because it's the wrong thing to do. And I think our reaction has really evolved. I think we as fans have a better understanding of athletes as people rather than faceless commodities. I think athletes have done a better job. Professional athletes have done a better job and have more avenue to express themselves personally through social media. It's not just having to filter everything through other media outlets or through team public relations departments. They have been free to be themselves in a way they haven't before. But athletes are, they're changing sports. We're hearing this. It is extraordinary that that Major League Baseball players, this will happen with football too. This will happen with every sport. It's going to happen with hockey. That there are going to be players who decide, no, this isn't the right time or place for me to do what I do, to make you feel better, to give your team, your whatever part of your identity is wrapped up in the team, for a player to say, no, I'm a human being, I'm a husband, I'm a father, and there are more important things for me to do than help your team win. That's really strong stuff, and it's important. It matters that they're doing this. And I think we have to reconcile as sports fans, as sports observers, we have to reconcile that your normal, your relationship with your team and with the athletes for whom you root is going to be different. And we're going to have to think a little harder about how we do some of this stuff. It isn't just going to be your faceless team and your tribe against this tribe. That we've got this on a personal level and an understanding of how empowered and how outspoken and how responsible so many players feel as citizens, and how they understand the platform that they have. Wait till you see what the NBA looks like. It's literally going to say Black Lives Matter on the court. It's going to say that. Those words are going to be on the court, on every court. There are going to be messages of social justice on the uniforms of NBA players. There was one groundswell of players saying they should wear, and I think I want to say it was maybe Jerry Brewer of the Washington Post, said wear the names of the people of color murdered by police. Wear their names on your jerseys. Wear those names. Make sure people know those names of people of color who have been murdered. Wear those names. And this is, we're in a different place. We are in, you can talk about unprecedented times and unique this and things we've never seen before. Sports is going to be different, and sports are going to feel different. And it's because of engaged and concerned and aware professional athletes. And I don't think that's a bad thing. We're going to hear from some of the Cubs principals coming up next. Jed Hoyer spoke yesterday. David Ross spoke yesterday. Some information and some feelings from them about what they're starting to try to do right now. That's all coming up straight ahead on The Score.
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Morning Show. Start your day with the stories that matter to Chicago sports fans. Live at 5. Mike Mulligan and David Hall. They're live and they're local. From the city you love. Doing it for the city you love. Mullion Hall, where Chicago goes for sports talk. Mornings 5 to 9. Only on Sports Radio 670 The Score. A radio.com sports station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Dan Bernstein with you on Sports Radio 670 WSCR The Score. And we are getting more tangible signs of the return of sports, of basketball finalizing plans in their bubble, of baseball releasing their rosters and bringing people back to town to talk about returning to action. And if you're just joining us, there was a report from TSN in Canada early this morning that Chicago is indeed one of four cities that remains on the short list. Two of these cities between Chicago, Las Vegas, Toronto, and Edmonton. And it's believed that it'll be either Chicago or Las Vegas and either Toronto or Edmonton. That was just sort of the assumption there would be an American hub and a Canadian hub. Well, we have our own hub. It's look, Chicago's always a hub city as long as we've got hub. Hello, hub Marcus, Brad Pitt, Antoine Fats Domino. And why would you do it in Vegas with coronavirus raging there? As long as you don't take the ice time of the Chicago South Meteors at Johnny's East. That's my only concern. And if that's the case, then I'm again it. I'm not for it. But sports are coming back. And locally, nationally, the story that I find amazing is how cool we are with players like, nope, I don't want to do it. I don't feel comfortable for whatever reason. We've come a long way as fans. I really do. We've come a long way from, and I know I'm on this radio station, a long way from the same place, like, I can't believe that guy took a game off to go witness the birth of his kid. Who does he think he is? My team's more important than that. He works for me. I buy the tickets. I buy the beer. That guy's my employee. We've come a long way, and it's a good thing. Some important Cubs were talking yesterday, including general manager Jed Hoyer, who was asked by our own Score baseball insider, Bruce Levine, asking him for why they've got 10 open spots on their 60-man player pool roster.
Obviously, this is the first time we've done this. And so I think, you know, we've been talking about this 60-man roster, I guess, for a few weeks now, knowing that this was a possibility. We didn't know what all the rules would be. Once we knew all the rules, the last, I guess, 4 or 5 days, we had a lot of conversations about the right way to put it together. And the more we talked and the more we got familiar with the rules, I think we felt like the right thing to do was to leave space. You can add a player anytime. There's no restrictions to adding players. But taking a guy off the 60 requires a real transaction. So a release, an outright, a trade. And because of that, because it's a lot easier to add than it is to subtract, we felt like the right thing to do was to leave room, to maneuver. We can, you know, get to camp, get a feel for our guys, you know, get a feel for our depth. And then if we get to a place where we feel like we need more major league depth, we can pivot in that direction. If we get to a place where we feel like we can add a few more prospects to our list, then we can do that as well. But we sort of felt like, why pigeonhole ourselves now? Why not, you know, leave that flexibility of 10? And like I said, we're doing something for the first time. So why not sort of dip your toe in the water a little bit? And then if we can, we can pivot from there in the right direction. We just don't know exactly what the right direction is going to be as we sit here today.
Well, that makes sense. We want to pivot in the right direction. What's the right direction? I don't know. I guess the point being, when you know so little, flexibility is better than not having flexibility. And that makes perfect sense to me of why they would want to preserve that opportunity. So, as we mentioned, Ian Desmond of the Rockies says he's not comfortable playing. Ryan Zimmerman of the Nationals, not comfortable playing. Mike Leake, he was one of the first, I think, who said the pitcher, he said, I'm not playing. Well, there are Cubs who would be considered high risk because Anthony Rizzo and John Lester are both cancer survivors. And Yu Darvish has been pretty clear about some of the concerns that he has had. So Jed Hoyer then went more in depth as to, are there any players considering not playing for the Cubs?
I think you have to talk to each of those guys individually about, you know, their concerns. I mean, my understanding is, yes, they would be at a higher risk, because of their cancer in the past. To this point, we have not had anyone that's talked to us about opting out as we sit here today. But that said, I've seen in the last hour or so that 3 players around the league have opted out. I'm sure there'll be more. And I feel like we have to respect that. You know, everyone's going to come at these decisions from a different angle, but I don't think anyone that plays in the major leagues is going to make that decision lightly. They're going to make it with a lot of input from by friends and family and probably from teammates as well. And they're not going to take that decision lightly. So, right now we don't have anyone that's that we know about that's considering it. But I think if we did, we would we'd respect the decision and understand that this is being made from a from a very important place of wanting to keep either themselves or keep their family members safe. We're certainly hopeful that we don't have any players test positive when they do the intake. But, at the same time, I think we're aware that there's that possibility certainly exists. I don't know about the percentages, what's going to happen when we do the intake. As far as positives right now, we currently have 2 staff members that are expected to be delayed and will not be with us at the beginning of camp, based on positive tests. To this point, we have not had any players test positive.
Can you say who those staff members are?
No, we can't. And actually, it's something that, going forward, I know it's going to be something we're going to talk about all summer, but we're not at liberty to give out names, because of HIPAA violations and regulations. And so, you know, I think we're allowed to sort of talk about, you know, numbers and things like that, but we're not allowed to, you know, give individual names. I think it's up to those individuals to decide if they want to announce it. So, you know, right now, like I said, right now we would have, we have two staff members that will not be with us at the beginning. Those tests were administered at home. They were not based on the intake. And we have not, I believe, to the best of my knowledge, we've not received the word yet about the first wave of intake results yet. We started testing on Saturday, and we don't have those results yet. So I can't tell you anything based on intake, but that those are from kind of pre-flight tests.
Follow up to that, Jed. So in terms of transparency during the season, if there's a late scratch, are we going to know if it's COVID related? How's that going
to
work?
No, we're not at liberty to say which injured list a player is placed on. So no, we're not at liberty to say that.
Jed Hoyer with some, I don't want to say ominous, that's probably the wrong word, but portentous comments when he says this is something we're going to be dealing with all summer. It tells me maybe there are some results that have come in that we're not going to know about, and it's going to get really confusing, and it's going to put us who talk about such things in a very difficult situation as well. I would think if the Cubs can't release data relative to HIPAA rules and all of a sudden there's a scratch or all of a sudden somebody's unavailable for a game and is placed on a list and we're not going to know why exactly it is. So the results are going to be rolling in any time within the next few days. It's very likely that we are going to get the news of Cubs tests among that group of 50. It would be mathematically unreasonable to think that a handful of them won't test positive. That's just to be expected as we look at all the numbers that are coming in at this point and the number of players who have been living in Arizona, Florida, and places where the virus is continuing to rage. So then we get to testing and what they're going to have to continue to do. It isn't just these intake tests. It's going to be ongoing, not just for players, but for executives, including Hoyer himself.
I'm doing it tomorrow, so I don't know yet, but you know, my understanding is it's a saliva test to test if you're positive for COVID now, and then it's a blood prick test that you put on a slide, and that's the antibody test. So that's my understanding of what the majority of what the intake test is. It's an antibody test and a COVID test. What was the first part of the question?
How many more players and staff members do you have to test?
A lot, most of them. You know, I think that the great majority of our players are going to test on Wednesday. I think most people are traveling Monday and Tuesday, and then most people are going to test on Wednesday. So to this point, I think it's only a handful of players that have tested so far.
Jed, can you take us through what a normal, you know, day will look like, I guess, whether it be spring or regular season in terms of testing? I mean, literally physically where players over at Wrigley Field, for example, or how's that going to work?
I haven't seen the exact setup yet. I'll see it tomorrow, and I could probably answer that question better. But yeah, my understanding is that it'll be sort of out in the, we're going to set up a place for testing out in the parking lot, and the guys will be able to come in, you know, take their test and you know, do their temperature check. I don't know exactly where the testing will be. I know the temperature check and like the daily, you have to go through, get your temperature check, answer a questionnaire every day. And then I think, I don't know exactly where the daily testing is going to take place. But anyway, that's going to be the procedure per day. I think players or staff in tier one test every other day. Staff members, you know, front office and other support staff that are in tier two, I think test twice a week.
And if someone has a high temperature, they're sent home immediately.
I think above 100.4 and they're sent home. Yeah. And I think they have further testing as a result. And people have to test before they come in as well. So you're required to test before you come to the ballpark, do a temperature check at home, report that. And then you also get a temperature check when you come into the ballpark.
I love the arbitrary 100.4. And I know it's probably not totally arbitrary, but what if somebody has a 100.3? Are you like, you know, you might want to go home. We can't send you home because you're not 100.4, but you're 100.34. Maybe you want to kind of go home. They came up with that number somehow. So the larger question, obviously, for somebody in his position, what are we really doing right here? And why are we doing it, knowing that the cases of the virus are going up across the country because the U.S. decided that we didn't want to contain it anymore and we could just pretend that there were other things going on and we could just decide to ignore it because we're selfish and bored and stupid. So how does he feel about still starting the season?
As this plan has been moving forward, obviously, and you watch the news and you read and you see that, you know, cases are spiking up in some of the states that we have a lot of baseball teams and a lot of players reside there. And that's something that we've had concerns about. I think that we're hopeful that all the protocols can keep guys safe once they're here. And I think some will come down to testing and strict protocols, and then some of it's going to come down to behavior. You know that we have to do a good job as an organization. We have to do a good job, but also we have to do a good job as an industry of realizing that we're going to have to alter our behaviors, and we're going to have to really be responsible to try to make sure that we don't have significant outbreaks. You know, there's going to be positive tests. There's no way around that. We have too many players in the league. I think it's unrealistic to think that we're not going to have some positive tests, but we have to do everything we possibly can to avoid, you know, to avoid the kind of outbreaks that happened in certain states right now. And I think as David alluded to earlier, you know, our team, we're going to have a lot of discussions about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate and what we should do. And I think the other 29 teams will as well, because obviously we're competing against each other, but at the same time, as an industry, the season only goes well if we can, you know, make sure that we're keeping those numbers down as much as possible and keeping as many guys active and on the field as possible.
Jed Hoyer, general manager of the Chicago Cubs, was one of two principals who spoke yesterday. The other was manager David Ross. I got to get used to saying that. Cubs manager David Ross. And he is presented with a little less of a decision tree as a National League manager would usually be, because he's got the DH position. But it means he's got to figure out who mans that slot each game. And these are his thoughts.
We've got some depth in that area, whether it's Kyle and Souza or Vic and Wilson and managing that dynamic. I mean, honestly, Bruce, in this short little sprint and Jed's touch on it, having some patience, it's about balancing the rest, guys who are giving us the best at bats. We're not going to have a huge sample size, guys getting into the season, and we're going to have to kind of read at bats as we go and what guys are squaring the ball up with some frequency and really try to put those guys in a situation to succeed. So we have a lot of options the way our roster is set up right now.
So of all times to be starting out a managerial career, a first-year manager, and it's going to be odd trying to figure out how to run a team in a 60-game season.
I joke with Jed and Theo all the time about there weren't any questions about this in the interview process that I went through. No, same thing as Jim. I've been chomping at the bit, excited to get started. The players are excited to get started back. We're still going to have to go out and compete at a high level. You know, the mantra that I've always had and the winning teams I've been on, you really do have to take it day to day. We understand that it's a shortened season, but the real winning is in the details of the daily process. And those are the things I'm going to focus on. We can't look at, you know, one game and what that loss or win might mean. We just have to come in every day, get our work in, play the brand of baseball we want to play, we're expected to play, and then come back and do the same thing the next day.
Cubs have been designed as a traditional pitching staff, having their five starters and then their relievers behind them. And that's as thoughts on pitching and philosophies toward approaching the distribution of pitching resources has changed in large part. But it sounds like they are going to remain, when it comes to their approach, pretty traditional.
We haven't talked about that. I mean, again, we have to wait and see where these guys are at and get our eyes on them. But most of these guys have stayed in shape and will be able to be stretched out. I think it'll be really unrealistic to expect guys to get to maybe 100 or so pitches right out of the chute. That may be a little bit of a challenge. So we'll see where each guy's at, the feedback we get when they start the inner squads and how they bounce back and see what those numbers look like. But right now we're just going to stick with our 5-man rotation and continue to move forward. And if we've got a, you know, the real important areas for me right now is that swing man, your Alec Mills types that can give you 2 or 3 innings to get to the back end of the bullpen. In those middle innings, if guys aren't stretched out enough, are going to be vitally important. And we've let our relievers and the guys in the bullpen and compete for those spots know that. And a lot of those guys are stretched out as well, so they can give us some length.
So here's the money cut from the Cubs rookie manager. You want to hear what a competitor sounds like? This is how he addresses the legitimacy or lack thereof of a 60-game season.
Yeah, I mean, if they're passing out a trophy, I want it. So, I mean, if they're handing out rings and we're all starting from the same point, I don't care if it's a 5-game season. I, you know, like, this is competition and it's what we enjoy doing. It's why we suit up. You know, there's a lot of benefits to being a Major League Baseball player. But if you talk to these players, they couldn't wait to get started. And it was like for almost every single guy you talk to, these guys were raring to go and couldn't wait to get back and just be around one another to get in this environment that we love. A lot of the guys miss this city with all it's been going through. I mean, this is, we're excited to be back. So yeah, I mean, everybody else can put something on it, but we win the whole thing. I'll still get a ring and a trophy and nice little. I don't know what the parade will look like, but we'll adjust that when we get there.
They're handing out a trophy I wanted. Well said. Good stuff from David Ross. We'll be hearing more from him in the days to come, in large part, because this is your home for Chicago Cubs baseball on the radio. We're going to talk more of it with PJ Mooney of The Athletic at his perspective on the restart, on the roster, on how it all looks for the Cubs. This is Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score.
David Haw here from the Mullion Haw Show, mornings 5 to 9. Cubs and Sox fans, with baseball set to return to Chicago, remember to start your mornings with us. We'll be covering both sides of town, discussing this unprecedented 60-game season, plus all the new rules, changes, and more. Mullion Haw, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago sports station.
I've been chomping at the bit, excited to get started. The players are excited to get started back. We're still going to have to go out and compete at a high level. You know, the mantra that I've always had and the winning teams I've been on, you really do have to take it day to day. We understand that it's a shortened season, but the real winning and is in the details of the daily process. And those are the things I'm going to focus on. We can't look at, you know, one game and what that loss or win might mean. We just have to come in every day, get our work in, play the brand of baseball we want to play, we're expected to play, and then come back and do the same thing the next day.
David Ross, pet peeve of mine, he's not chomping at the bit, he's champing at the bit. But I'll have to let that go, even as my blood boils. You're not chomping. Although I think because of usage, chomping has made its way in as somehow it's legitimized because of the bastardization of it, but he's champing at the bit. That's the idiom. Patrick Mooney is the senior writer of The Athletic who covers the Cubs. He is on Twitter at PJ_Mooney, and he's on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Patrick, how are you?
Good, Dan. How you been?
I'm good, and I'm interested to see how this all gets started back up again. And I found, listening in between some of what Jed Hoyer was saying yesterday, a couple of things. First of all, he says this is something we're going to be dealing with all summer. I mean, he knows that once these tests start rolling in, there's going to be, inevitably, there's going to be some positives. And he didn't close the door on any Cubs opt-outs. He didn't say for sure that they knew that everybody was going to be willing to play. What don't we know?
I think we don't know what the situation on the ground is going to look like. I think, you know, what Jed said publicly, what Sadiv and I had heard privately, is that to this point, no Cubs have expressed a desire to opt out. That is their kind of operating assumption here, that whatever, the 39 guys ticketed for the Wrigley Field summer training camp will show up there. I just think that you can kind of never say never in a situation like this. I think, you know, we saw how, you know, the Arizona bubble sounded like a good idea to some when Arizona was quote unquote coronavirus free. And obviously you're seeing kind of the cases surging and spiking, you know, there and throughout the South and West. And I think it's just, I think as media people, we're just going to have to get used to a lot of this kind of conditional phrasing of to this point, right now, et cetera, because this thing, you know, has been changing so quickly.
What still matters from spring training? Like, what still applies? Because it's been hard for me. I'm trying to go back, and everything is just such a blur, generally, like knowing what day it is or what my kids' names are at this point. But just thinking, like, all that we went through in spring training and all the storylines and everything we said and everything we thought, what are the important threads, whether it's Chris Bryant's situation or him as the leadoff hitter or anything else? What can we rekindle that mattered then that matters now, and what doesn't?
That's a great question. I guess we're going to find out. I think maybe because of the soundbite you used introing me here, I think David Ross and his presence still matters. He made the joke yesterday that, you know, he's been telling Jen and Theo, you know, there were no questions about this during my interview process. And while it's unfair to think of him as like a public health expert, he is certainly someone who's been a good listener and a good communicator throughout his career. He knows kind of what those players go through on a day-to-day basis. And he kind of got this job saying, I've never been afraid of having uncomfortable conversations. And I think that's going to be kind of a recurring theme here of just keeping guys on point, recognizing that personal accountability is going to be huge. Trying to maintain this, whether or not it's an illusion, this idea of kind of a bubble. And so I think David Ross, as this kind of central star of the daily Zooms, is going to be something that we're going to be talking about for as long as this season lasts.
Well, Theo Epstein is going to get his urgency, too, for a guy who has ended the last two seasons just talking about, you know, what October starts in March or whatever it's been, whatever his phrasing has been. Now he's going to get his urgency. And we had a conversation last week with Jim Riggleman that was really good about how the stuff that you can't see or hear and where that urgency manifests itself. And, you know, Riggs was saying that maybe there's something that's going on in the clubhouse, or maybe you got a little conflict or something that needs resolution, that previously you'd let it kind of play out, or maybe you'd let a veteran player say something or give it a couple days, let it breathe. And he says you can't do that now. That now you got to nip anything in the bud. That the manager's going to have to really sense what's going on and maybe call somebody into his office when he wouldn't otherwise have over the 162. Do you think Ross is ready to do that, or do you think that's something that Andy Green's also going to help him out with, having done it before?
Well, you've talked a lot about Andy Green's influence as someone who has done the job before and really sees kind of the game from a really high level and understands all of the kind of levels of an organization and how they're supposed to work together. But I think kind of what you're alluding to, Dan, is this idea of heightened focus and concentration. The big idea was, okay, like, you know, group stretches and extra work together. And now literally, you know, in this 101-page operations manual, there's, you know, these ideas are prohibited, that you're going to have to, you know, Ross is talking about, you're kind of getting in and getting your work done and getting out of there, and that there are going to be limits on the amount of players who can work together, and all of this stuff is going to be staggered. And so that maybe we over-exaggerated some of these ideas of urgency here and there, but I think ultimately what this season will show is, you know, whether the Cubs are good enough or not. We've spent a lot of time, you know, talking about environmental factors and the World Series hangover, and particularly when they didn't do that much to the actual roster, we kept talking about it more and more. And I'm just really fascinated to watch, you know, assuming this season gets off the ground to see whether these Cubs are good enough or not. If some of those ideas that they were stressing in spring training, if they can carry over under these extraordinary circumstances.
And the point is, we may not even know, because 60 games isn't enough to tell how good anybody or any team is. And I keep thinking about the desire of a manager to ride a hot hand. And it came down to the conversation we had last week with Ian Happ about just how hard it is to get ready to hit live major league pitching. And how even when you think you've got your timing, that sometimes you, when you watch video of yourself, you realize you're just not activating physically when you think you are, and how long that can take. Is it incumbent on Ross now to maybe not wait on a guy he would otherwise wait on and say, I need people out there right now who are ready to go, and maybe a lesser name who is in better condition to play right now for whatever reason gives me a better chance to win than a star who I would usually wait to get to his back of the baseball card numbers over the 162?
Yeah, this goes back to something you had mentioned, of the idea of the spring training carryover. I mean, David Ross came in and very quickly said he liked the idea of a set lineup. Now, every manager kind of says that in general, but it did feel like a subtle change from the Joe Maddon era. And I know people have kind of penciled in Kyle Schwarber as a DH, and David Ross has talked to him about that idea, but I'm really curious if Kyle Schwarber, after everything finally locking in for him at the plate and him working himself into a very capable defensive left fielder, he's going to have to learn something totally different on the fly now. And I wonder if that's going to impact his offensive game. You have guys like Happ and Alberto Mora, who the Cubs have been waiting on to finally have everything click for them. Jason Hayward was already looking at kind of a somewhat reduced role against left-handers. And then obviously Steven Souza is coming off just a gruesome, knee injury. So yeah, Ross is going to have to figure all that out on the fly in the middle of a pandemic.
Easy things, right? No worries. Yeah. Patrick Mooney is our guest on Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score, talking Cubs here. I also can't wait to see how he responds and how the Cubs manage leverage. And we know that baseball has been evolving to an understanding of maybe the most important out of the game is in the fifth inning. And we can't just pretend that it's going to be in the seventh, the eighth, or the ninth. How do you think it changes now, when the outcomes, every outcome just matters so damn much, how it can, you can get into your roster and begin the cascade of roster moves so much earlier in a game now?
Yeah, I think this will reveal just how good this pitching infrastructure is. I mean, the Cubs have pointed to it for a long time, all of their advancements in their pitch lab, the way they've been trying to build this Triple-A Iowa shuttle, and I think you have seen lots of unexpected contributors emerge, whether it's a Rowan Wick or trading for someone like Jesse Chavez. Obviously, the Cubs are not going to have months to figure out what they need and readjust at the trade deadline, which has been really a strength of Theo's baseball operations department. But yeah, I think Ross yesterday kind of downplayed the idea of, you know, openers or kind of really dramatic changes to the rotation at the start. But I do think in game, you're going to see Ross really making aggressive decisions. And I think that, you know, we've kind of seen that that competitiveness of him as a player. I mean, he understands kind of what it's like to be in between the lines and how you can kind of send messages to your players, and I think the Cubs will hear that loud and clear.
Lastly, are you getting some better sense of what your day-to-day existence is going to be like and how you'll be covering the team and how that's going to change?
That's a good question. Some of that, I would say, is evolving. I think yesterday was a preview. It was Jed and David Ross on a Zoom call. There were, I believe, 32 participants. It went for about 45 minutes. I don't think it'll be that long every day, but for now, if you're in the ballpark, I think you'll be kind of in your seat. There won't be roaming around Wrigley Field, which is always kind of a fun part of the job. If you need to kind of take a break and get away from your computer, that's not really an option anymore. And obviously clubhouse access was closed in early March there as we started to get a better sense of this virus. That's not coming back at all this year. So I think the media will certainly have to adapt the way everyone else has.
Patrick, thanks as always. Continued good health.
You too, Dan. Thank you.
That is Patrick Mooney, senior writer of The Athletic. We will continue to talk baseball with former MLBer and current Radio.com MLB insider and Swings and Misses co-host Cody Decker. Always fun and opinionated. He is going to join us to talk about the return of MLB next on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes here, weekdays noon to 2, reminding you that you can listen to The Score remotely on your laptop or your mobile device through the Radio.com app, or just tell your smart speaker to play 670 The Score. You can always count on us to cover the stories that matter to Chicago sports fans, because we're live and we're local. So listen to The Lawrence Holmes Show, weekdays noon to 2, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.